Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was born on a cotton field in Mississippi, one of 12 children, and the only one with a high school diploma. He grew up in Washington, D.C. and Flint, Michigan, and ultimately earned a Doctor of Philosophy from the University of Alabama. He has served in higher education for 27 years at various institutions, and in 2010, he became the 14th president of Central Michigan University. His name, Dr. George Ross, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. George Ross, the president of Central Michigan University. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's my pleasure and honor to be with you tonight.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I am a product of a pretty large family. Parents are born and raised in the great state of Mississippi, where I was born. But, Jack, I'm one of 12 children, six older and five younger. I had eight brothers and three sisters. My father was actually a sharecropper in Mississippi when I was delivered by a midwife years ago. He moved quite a bit, and people always ask me, was he military? But he was actually moving, just trying to do better for the family. So took us from Mississippi to Washington, D.C., and there through my formative years and on to Flint, Michigan, and when I was a teenager. So being such a large family, there were 30 years difference in ages from the oldest to the youngest. But, you know, it was interesting being such a big family and being the middle child.
And what was the biggest thing you learned, Doctor, from your mom, and the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Probably from both of them. Work hard and earn what you get. No one will give you anything. They always encouraged hard work. They weren't formally educated people. My father was third rate, mother through the eighth grade, but they wanted their children to do better, and they encouraged education. From my mother, the golden rule, she was instilling in all of her children to treat people fairly and be fair to people. And probably my best management lesson was from my father. And I've told people over my career that I probably learned my ultimate management lesson from my father, and that even when people make mistakes, you encourage them to do better. You don't cut their heads off. You figure out how to make them better and help them do better. And when they do better, you celebrate that. And that comes from a third-rate educated Mississippi sharecropper, but it served me well in my career.
As you mentioned, 12 children in the family, and you are the only one that graduated high school.
This is true.
Why you?
You know, God's grace, we raised in the same household. Many of us went to the same schools in Washington, D.C. and Flint, Michigan. Between my parents and, frankly, some teachers who supported me along the way as early as second grade in D.C. or high school at Flint Northern, God's grace and people who paid attention and encouraged me. It wasn't easy, particularly in junior high and high school, being the nerd. I was the nerd, but mom and dad would keep encouraging, and my teachers would encourage me. I don't know what differentiates me from my brothers and sisters, from the same stock, but I was touched, and I'm pleased and feel blessed.
Not only are you the only one of the 12 with a high school degree, you then went on to get a BA and a master's in business administration from Michigan State, and then you got a doctor of philosophy from the University of Alabama. How did that ever happen?
Well, you know, when I came to college, again, no one in my immediate family had ever attended, and I only applied to one school, Michigan State, And the only reason I applied there is because I had gone there on a field trip when I was in the ninth grade and a student at Emerson Junior High in Flint. And didn't know anything about college, and my counselor thought, you know, my grades were good, I should apply. And I applied to Michigan State based on a field trip 3 years before to the museum there. It just seemed like a natural progression from my high school years, and teachers encouraging me, and my mother and father proud to send one of their kids off to college. The master's actually followed as my career progressed through public accounting. And the PhD at Alabama, once I got into higher ed, it just made sense to me because I saw myself hopefully in a leadership position as a president someday, and that PhD, given the nature of higher ed, was something I needed to do, and it was challenging. Actually, with the PhD, I was working at Tuskegee and taking classes at Alabama in Tuscaloosa, which was almost a three-hour drive one way. And that classwork went on for over 3 years, back and forth between Tuscaloosa and Tuskegee.
If there's a listener tonight, a young listener, Doctor, that says, wow, what an inspiration. And this young listener says, I don't want to be gobbled up by the streets like so many around me. Doctor, what can and what should I do?
You know, I attribute my career through looking beyond my circumstances. We came from, if I say very modest financial situations, I'm probably exaggerating. We were poor. I would encourage any young people or anyone listening tonight that your circumstances shouldn't dictate your future, that education does make a difference, that education does transform lives, it transformed mine. There's nothing particularly special about me. I can tell you that I have brothers and sisters who, frankly, I believe are smarter than me. They made different choices. I think if education changes life, it changes the game, and I would encourage education. People are looking for talent, be it in a university setting or a corporate setting. If you're talented, if you're willing to work hard, the American dream can come true.
We're talking to Dr. George Ross, president of Central Michigan University, who in 1986 got into higher education. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Grisul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Grisul, and we're talking to Dr. George Ross, who's been in higher education since 1986. Doctor, how did that ever happen that you got into higher education?
Well, Jack, it was, I've said to friends and colleagues who've asked me that question over the years, it was almost like getting on that serendipitous escalator and riding it into higher ed. Actually, I was a practicing certified public accountant in Detroit, and there were some personal changes in my life, and my firm closed, and after trying to decide what I was going to do with myself, an opportunity came up for me, and I took a job because I needed a job. I didn't have a CPA firm anymore, and got into higher ed, started interacting really with students, and just kind of got reminded how positive education had been in my life, and thought, I want to do this. And we started a small liberal arts school in Detroit, went from there to Tuskegee, and on throughout my career these past 25 plus years.
April 3rd, 2007 was a great day in your life. You were named president of Elkhorn State University. You're on top of the world. 6 weeks later, God's got other plans for your life. You get leukemia. Talk about that experience.
Well, Jack, actually on April 3rd, I was on the campus of Elkhorn, and on that particular day, we had a series of 11 on-campus interview sessions, and the State Board of Mississippi met that evening and named me president. I was on top of the world. That was April 3rd. The last week of May, the Wednesday after Memorial Day, I was diagnosed with acute leukemia, and had some pretty trying medical challenges. Hospitalization for over 3 weeks, chemotherapy that went on for a year and a half, again, God's grace. My wife, Elizabeth, as the ultimate caregiver. You know, when you take those vows and say, for better or worse, well, I was worse, and she was there with me, as were my friends and family, as was Central Michigan University, where I was a VP leaving, as was Alcorn, who waited for me to get to a point I could come to work. I believe that it was a message about getting my attention, about what's really important. I think it's prepared me for the presidency at Alcorn, for the presidency at Central. Tomorrow isn't promised. You do your best you can do every day.
So we jump to 2010. You become the 14th president of Central Michigan University. You come back. Doctor, what are the main duties as president of a major university?
Well, as large as we are, and Central is one of the largest public universities in the country, within the top 100 in size, over 28,000 students. We teach in 16 other states in physical locations there. We teach in Canada. We teach in Mexico. We employ thousands of people. But through all of that, my main responsibility is the success of my students. That's our main responsibility. And success for us, meaning preparing our students from an education standpoint to be able to go out and secure jobs, to be in their communities and contribute, but not only from an education standpoint, from a character standpoint, you know, producing educated people of good character and all the things around that. Now, I could talk about fundraising responsibilities and curricular responsibilities and dealing with legislatures here in Lansing and in D.C., all that's part of it. But ultimately, everything we do should be geared towards the success of our students in the classroom and in the laboratories, but also building them as individuals. And at Central Michigan University, we graduate leaders, and that's my ultimate responsibility, to graduate leaders.
Why should a young man or woman come to Central Michigan versus MSU, U of M, Wayne State, Northwood, Ferris, etc.?
Reason I just said, we graduate leaders at CMU. I could give you the list of curriculum in our College of Business or College of Health Professions or our new College of Medicine, and you come for all those educational reasons, but when you leave Central Michigan University as a Chippewa, you leave here with the ability to compete with anybody in the country and the world in the workplace. But you also leave with that little extra. We place alumni throughout this country, throughout the world, who are leading organizations. And if you come to Central, you're going to leave here with the ability to lead. And that's what this world needs.
Every organization has a culture. Mm-hmm. And that culture emanates, Dr. Ross, from the leader.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of Central Michigan, you get very high marks from the kids who say, they care about me. How do you propagate that culture of caring throughout your team?
Well, caring is part of who we are, as you mentioned, is our culture. It starts with me as the vice presidents, the deans, the faculty members, students with each other. As you walk across our campus, I know as you have, Jack, it doesn't matter who you talk to. They're going to be friendly. They're going to be supportive. If there's a problem or an issue, people run in gangs to make sure that that gets mitigated or gets solved. I regularly, with my students or faculty or staff members, I interact with them. I like to tell a story of my student leadership, my SGA leadership and fraternity leadership. I meet with them twice a month. And, Jack, I used to have meetings on campus, and we'll do it over lunch or something. But they decided they want to do it on Friday nights at my house and have pizza. But if that's what they want to do, that's what I do. But that's not just me. It permeates throughout our university, making our students feeling cared for. And they return in kind that to other students and other visitors to our campus.
These last 2 years as president, what have the CMU students taught you, Dr. Ross?
They have taught me that given all the challenges facing our state, our country, and our planet, there's some hope out there. These are pretty bright young people. They care about our environment. They care about where our world is going. What they've taught me is humility. They're pretty bright young people with a keen sense of their future. They've taught me that we, as the current adults, training them and getting them ready, have the ultimate responsibility in getting them ready. They've taught me to be humble and to keep caring.
71% of your students volunteer. That far exceeds the national average. How do you explain that the volunteerism is so strong amongst the CMU students?
I think it gets back to our culture of caring. Our volunteer efforts are here in Mount Pleasant, where our home campus is. It's in our satellite campuses around southwest Detroit. It's in Atlanta, where we teach, or San Diego, where we teach. But we volunteer our alternate breaks at this campus, where many students on spring break are in Texas or in Florida on the beaches. Our students are in communities across this country helping, but it's part of that caring. And the statistic is right. 71% of our students participate in volunteer activities on our campus, and we're proud of that.
In a recent magazine, CMU Magazine, your women's soccer team this past year posted a 15-3-3 season. Fabulous year. At the same time, they posted the highest GPA of 571 women's soccer teams throughout the country, 3.7.
Mm-hmm.
But the most amazing thing is for the seventh straight year, the CMU women's soccer program has claimed the nation's top grade point average, averaging 3.7 all 7 years. 571 programs, 7 years in a row, you've been number one. That's impossible.
Not impossible. We're proud of our young ladies on our soccer, in our soccer program. And you're right, Jack. It's those 571 programs are across all of Division I programs in the country, Division II and Division III. So we actually, it's not the same set of young ladies from 7 years ago. Actually, we're graduating. Those students, new students are coming in. Again, part of the culture. You come to Central to get an education. Our athletes, our student athletes in soccer, I'm very proud of. I'm proud of the ones across all our programs. If you look across our athletic programs here, almost 500 intercollegiate athletes, their overall GPA is over 3.0. You come to Central to get a good education, and we intend to develop it as individuals. And our athletes are the ultimate ambassadors. They're out there publicly. In the case of soccer, on the soccer field, not only are they smart, we go out and compete at the highest level at Division I, but part of the culture. You come here for an education. You come here to develop. You come here to learn how to be stewards back in your community. So it's an amazing thing. I kid with folks that maybe it's something in the water here in Mount Pleasant, but very proud of those young ladies.
We're talking to Dr. George Ross. When we come back, we'll ask him about maybe the ultimate ambassador for Central Michigan, Dick Enberg. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasul, and we're with the president of Central Michigan University, Dr. George Ross, who, when he turned 60, one of the birthday gifts he got was his own U.S. stamp. Tall cotton. Dr. Dick Enberg, graduate in the 50s at Central Michigan and loves Central Michigan. Fabulous human being. Talk about a man who cares. Can you tell us one or two stories about Dick Enberg?
I'd love to. I met Mr. Dick Enberg for the first time this past fall. We dedicated a busk of him at our event center. And we talked about culture earlier. Dick attended here back in the 1950s, and the culture was here then. He tells the story of Charlie Anspaugh, the then president of Central, going to Armada, and Dick went to a very small high school there, and offering him a $100 scholarship to come to CMU. And just a regular kid, no ambitions about being an announcer or in broadcasting. That came as part of a student job here on campus. And people saw in Dick what he didn't see in himself. He broadcasts sports for CMU here in the local community. And as they say, the rest is history. But Dick Enberg would tell you right now, and I think he's been on your show. He owes everything to Central Michigan University and the opportunity. And we still today provide those opportunities to our students. He's a great man. We saw him recently at an alumni event in Phoenix. We have a great alumni chapter out there. And Dick stood up in front of 100-plus alumni and told his story from very humble beginnings, small town. And we're still recruiting today those type of students to CMU.
1994, CMU authorized the first charter school in America. You're the largest authorizer of charter schools in Michigan. Talk about that aspect of Central Michigan.
Well, you know, we believe we are the gold standard of charter school authorizers, not only in Michigan, but across the country. And you're right, the very first authorized charter by a university, not only in the state, but in the country, was done at Central Michigan University. And frankly, it was the foresight of then-Governor Engler with that charter school legislation. And our charter schools perform above the averages. We're educating students throughout the state of Michigan. If we were a school system with over 30,000 charter school students in our system, we'd be the third-largest school system in the state. On May 21, we're actually dedicating our charter school center to John Engler. He will be on our campus with Governor Snyder, and we're going to dedicate the charter school center in recognition of his involvement in getting charter schools started in the state.
Earlier you talked about the need, the ultimate requirement for an education today. Dr. Ross, how do we create a culture of education in our inner cities, Detroit, Pontiac, Flint, etc.?
Now, Jack, I believe that it has to start in the household. And I understand in some households that may be a challenge because of the makeup of households throughout the state, various areas. But we have to start high households to grade school. We can't wait until high school to say to students that a college and university education will provide great opportunities to you. We've got to start that lesson much earlier. Here at Central, we're starting in middle school, and there have been arguments made to me we should be in grade schools. Students are making decisions, and frankly, within the education system, a student's success, as I read the literature, by the time you're third or fourth grade, depending on how you perform, it kind of predicts how you perform academically. Household first, but definitely by grade school, those messages about the importance of education and learning is where we need to start.
Michigan has a fabulous higher educational machine. We give degrees, and then many of our best and brightest leave the state. How do we turn that around?
You know, I think our best and brightest leading the state is the direct reflection of the economic challenges in this country since the Great Recession of 2007 that we're still trying to recover from as people are looking for better opportunities. I believe the national economy as well as the state economy is beginning to turn. At Central Michigan, more than 70% of our graduates stay in the state, and they work in this state, and they go back to communities. That's not the case across all of higher education here in Michigan. But I think as opportunities, I will share with your audience and our audience tonight that over the next 13 years, between now and 2025, we're going to need about 1 million college-educated adults in the population to work in Michigan. So there will be great opportunities here. Our challenge will be across all 15 is to be able to educate and graduate those numbers of students. So I think people staying will increase. We've just got to get them in school and get them out of school.
Dr. Ross, how do we get our American kids to go into math, science, and engineering?
Again, Jack, I'm going to go back to grade school to perk that interest. And where you're leading with this question, we are woefully behind in the STEM subjects in science and technology, engineering and mathematics. We're woefully behind in the adult population 25 of older, of educated adults, meaning adults with either a bachelor's or two-year degree, a tertiary education, post-secondary degree. We rank 16th in the world. And as you're correct, in the STEM areas, we're even lower. We're in a ranked 30-something in the world. To say we have to do better is obvious, but again, it's got to start, I believe, in the grade schools. Our math is one of our biggest challenges for students not only coming to Central, but also coming to other universities, and not only in Michigan, but across the country. But that's the fix we can't do in 11th and 12th grade or freshman year of college. And we have to increase those numbers.
Last year, you spoke at four Chinese universities. What did that experience teach you?
It was a fascinating experience, actually, at one of those in Shanghai. I was part of an international symposium with representatives from Australia, China, New Zealand, and I believe Italy. But what that taught me, not only speaking at those universities, I got a chance to interact, obviously, with their presidents, actually with the Secretary of Education of the Communist Party in China, but I got to interact with their students. And the question I got consistently across all four universities, are these Chinese students wanting to know what they needed to do to be able to get to America to attend our universities? The lesson I left there with is they're hungry, and they're hungry for the best education, and they're hungry to compete. And I relay our message to our students here at Central, that you're not competing only with students from Michigan State and Michigan when you graduate. You're competing with students in China, in India, in Brazil, in France. It's truly a global society.
Young people today have a terrific challenge trying to traverse life's landmines, these Uzis that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you give to the kids, and what advice do you give to their parents about successfully getting through their teen and young adult years?
It isn't. And it's easy to say looking back. I've been in that situation to a certain extent growing up in my formative and teen years in Flint, Michigan. But it isn't instant. You have to work at it. I've been told I'm successful because I'm the president of Central Michigan University. But it's like I'm like a 35-year overnight success. I've been working at this. I will say to parents and students, it's really a marathon. You have to work at it. And your success will come in working hard, as basic as that sounds, and working hard when no one else is watching, and taking responsibility for what you do as an individual, as a professional. Education, education, education. Without it, your chances are much more challenging. With it, they're very, very promising. But it's really a work ethic and a constant work ethic over a period of time.
I listen to a lot of parents, great parents, 3-4 kids,
mm-hmm.
and they refer to one of them as their prodigal son, their prodigal daughter.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to parents who have a real challenge with one of their children?
Well, Jack, I only have one child, so I can't imagine what my mother and father went through with 12. But we're different. We're all different personalities. You love them all. You give them all the same opportunities or comparable opportunities. You encourage them all the same way. But you have to hold them accountable. In my parenting, my daughter, who I love to death now, who's an adult and successful in her own right, during those challenging times, you can't waver on the discipline. I will talk to family members now with some of my grandnieces and nephews, and so I'm going to keep this in my family. But they seem to want to please and compromise and be friends with their children. These are my grandnieces and nephews, and I'm saying, wait a minute, you have to be their parent first and their friend second.
We're talking to Dr. George Ross, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. George Ross, who is the 14th president of Central Michigan University since 2010. Doctor, I had breakfast recently with a terrific salesperson, John Lovasco, fabulous human being. And he says, we're all in sales. And he tries to tell all young people, learn to speak, you know, be in front of people. And so many of our young people, all they want to do is text.
Mm-hmm.
No networking, no communication, you know, eye to eye and voice to voice. What do you say about all this texting of the young people?
The technology itself is wonderful. It's going to be even become more wonderful as we move forward. But that human contact, I would totally agree with the person you had lunch with. The interaction between individuals, the communicating with individuals, far outweighs texting and Facebooking. As we move forward as a state and as a country, that's even more critical and more important as we interact with people from different countries. At Central, we teach critical thinking skills and communication skills. Our graduates, again, graduate as leaders, but leaders have to be able to communicate. And communication is not that thumb pushing those little buttons. It has to be in writing. It has to be in verbal communication. I wholly agree with that.
You get very high marks for your vision. How will education change in the next 10 years?
Over the next decade, I believe that education will become even more global as we interact again, not only within this United States, but throughout the world. I think the delivery of education will be more towards the electronic and online. There will always be a need for physical campuses because you need that interaction. But the idea of face-to-face or online or hybrid will be better developed. I believe that education cannot be about developing curricula, whether we put it online, but how our students learn. And students learn differently. And I think we're going to get better at that as we move forward, how to deliver the education so students are receiving it, processing it, and benefiting from it.
You could argue that any university is in the business of change, and today the only constant is change. We all love change for other people, but most of us find change in our own life very difficult. Talk to us about embracing change.
I think we don't have a choice. Change is a constant, and it changes every day. What we used to be, there's a quote I love from President Kennedy, and it goes like this, that change is the law of life, and those who only look to the past or the present are certain to miss the future. And I think it captures the need for change. And whether we change or not, change is occurring around us. And that's why the ability to teach our students how to be critical thinkers and how to learn and be lifelong learners to deal with the change. The jobs that they will be working over the next 10 years, we don't even know what many of them are at this point. And a way to be able to adapt and be successful is being able to change. So that's individually, organizationally, at our university. Again, changing curriculum, how we deliver that curriculum, is ongoing process.
In the 27 years you've been involved with higher education, you have been around thousands of professors, teachers. What do all the great ones have in common?
I have been, you're right, I've been over six or seven different universities, thousands of faculty members. What I believe the great ones have in common is a passion for learning. A passion to see their students learn and perform, and they care about it. When I watch faculty here at CMU and watch them interact with students, or when I'm interacting with students, they talk about their faculty. The ones, you know, they get excited, and there's that gleam in their eye. They're talking about Professor so-and-so, and it all boils down to that professor caring about their learning and their passion for learning. I think it's passion for learning.
What dreams and goals do you still have, Dr. Ross?
You know, Jack, I on a very personal level, I'm looking forward to grandchildren. I would I'd love, if God blesses me, to be able to see a grandchild grow up and go on and make something positive out of their lives. I'd love to see our university here continue in our stewardship of the communities that we serve from a professional level. I believe the recovery in Michigan is real. It's coming, and I see us at Central as being a critical part of that in developing our students. Professionally, I like to see that 70% staying in Michigan go back to 85 or 90%. But, you know, again, on a personal level, and I want to see, and we can't forget that. I'd like to see a grandchild in my life and hug my wife and as we rock that grandbaby one day.
There's a listener tonight who's going through really tough times, and he or she says, "Doctor, I'm praying, but he's not answering." What do you say to that?
Keep praying.
And last question, as our time winds down, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, to the young listeners tonight, and I hope there's some out there, very briefly, I said it earlier, there's nothing special about George Ross, coming from 12 kids in the household, very poor. Think beyond your current circumstances. School and education is extremely important. I'm an African-American man, and I've had people over my career say, "Well, didn't that hold you back?" And I would say, no, it didn't, because people are looking for talent. They're looking for people with a good education, the ability to communicate, the ability to think. But you got to think beyond where you are. And particularly for the young people, because I experienced it, being a good student and performing well in school, I was teased as a student because I performed well. I was trying to act a certain way. Don't let that deter you, because the reward is in front of you. Those of us perceived as being successful, we got here because we kept working at it, no matter what anyone else said. You're doing the right thing. Stay in school. Do well in school. You will be rewarded.
Dr. George Ross, you are special. You're an inspiration. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack.
It was an honor to have you.
It's my pleasure.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohem.
Believe in yourself.